Now we both kinda like it. Now we both kinda know that if we're ever gonna make it, we just need to let go.
You're listening to the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment.
I'm recording this podcast on May 5th, 2017. I'm here at the Stir Trek Conference in Columbus, Ohio. My guest today is a Scrum Master, Agile Coach with Cardinal Solutions, Charles Huseman. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. How about yourself, man?
Doing great. Thanks for being on the show. We kind of go way back here in Columbus, so it's great to have you on finally. So we're going to talk a little bit about project management, Scrum, Agile today. Let's start with maybe a tough question to answer in a brief period of time. What does Agile mean?
I always like the joke is that like Agile, every time you run into a Scrum Master and like something comes up and they always like, oh, we're Agile. To me, agility is really a change. It involves a lot of different things. You always coach Agile in terms of an opposition to Waterfall. So Waterfall goes through your four phases, right? You do planning, design, development, deploy, and that process usually takes a year or more. You know, so if you go way back, that's what we did, right? And then we got better. We're like, hey, you know, maybe you know the market's moving faster. We should react to change. So we went into iterative development and you know rational unified process. So instead of delivering stuff at the end of a year, now we're delivering the stuff at 2 to 3 months, maybe a quarterly or every 6 months. So agility is really kind of delivering stuff every couple of weeks and having a releasable product. And so that's part of it. So that's the delivering stuff faster. The other part of it is that it's really the merger of IT and the business unit together. So the business has a voice, the product owner on the team, and they're responsible for kind of representing the stakeholders and making sure stuff gets done. And so you avoid some of this conflict. You've got the prioritized backlog of work the team works off of. When a new story comes into play, all of a sudden, instead of having that conflict of, hey, you guys are going to work overtime to get this stuff done, now we can have a conversation about, hey, where does this fit on my backlog? Is it more important than this? Is it less important than this? Can we push this off to a future release? And so instead of having a confrontational release, you kind of have this more conversational release. People want to think, and I've always done this because I've set up teams, I've done Agile transitions. People are like, I'm going to do Agile. Like all of a sudden, all of our problems are going to be solved, right? Like magically software gets delivered in 30 days or less. But it's not. And I know people always kind of grimace when I use this analogy, but Agile is your like angry stepmom. She's not going to fix your problems, but she's going to tell you about every single one of them, and it's up to you to fix them. And that's kind of what I think is it does highlight the issues faster so that you have metrics on your team and your team does a retrospective every couple of weeks to figure out what can we do better. Your team gets better over time and it gets better sooner. So, you know, Agile always has these giant postmortem releases, right? Or postmortem chats where the team gets together 7 months after, you know, after the project's done. And all of a sudden now we're talking about, you know, how we could have made it better. That's great data. That's good to know. But it would be great if I had known that 6 months ago so we could have fixed those issues. And I know Agile always gets a really, you know, weird reputation. But I always like it because, again, it's a closer team. You can fix stuff. You deliver business value sooner. And so that's kind of my spiel on Agile.
Right. So a couple things I wanted to just highlight from what you said there that I've definitely heard before and I like about an Agile approach is you use the word prioritized backlog. Some people have told me in the past a prioritized backlog is basically instant Agile. Mm-hmm. The other thing you said was it sort of surfaces issues faster and helps you to fail faster. So that can help you improve faster as well. When I think of Agile, I start with the Agile Manifesto and sort of those four lines, and that's sort of the lowercase Agile. Now, you mentioned that you're a Scrum Master, and Scrum is an implementation of Agile or an Agile process. Can you describe that just briefly?
You have different, you know, religions within the overall framework. So, you know, and Scrum is kind of prescriptive about that you have time boxed events. So you have your sprint planning, you know, the big concept, and I'm sorry, let me back up. The big concept in Scrum, right, is you have the increment, which is your sprint, which is a 2 to 3 week or 2 to 4 week period of time where the team works. And at that point you kind of stop. And then you have other time boxed activities like the daily stand up, the retrospective, sprint planning and the sprint review. And so you have all these things that are all about time boxes. And I like that. I think it's kind of nice. It's a good, the nice thing about Scrum, it's a good starter Agile framework for people to use. And then I think as you progress down the way, you can figure out what stuff works and doesn't work. And I think that what people get caught up with is that they're like, oh, this Scrum super prescriptive or Safe super prescriptive or XP super prescriptive. It's not. I mean, it's three role, you know, it's a number of roles, it's a number of activities, it's a number of artifacts that you have. At the end of the day, as your teams evolve over time, over years, and you know, as you keep that team together, which is super important, is keeping that standing team together, is that some of that stuff starts to fall away. You don't necessarily need to have some of these things that are super prescriptive. But to start with it, you really kind of need to have a place. You need to have a foundation and a framework to kind of keep you on the rails. But over time, I think you see like super mature teams or at some point don't need a lot of this stuff. It's kind of inferred and everybody knows how to work together. And it becomes like and I know your sports teams are kind of always an easy analogy, but when you play on a sports team long enough and over time, I don't have to, and you're working from the same playbook. I don't have to know that, like, and I play hockey, so I'll use a hockey analogy. I know that when I'm coming up the ice and I know, I don't have to look, I know that my center is going to be behind me to my left. And I can make that blind pass, or I can make a dump along the wall behind me knowing that my defenseman's there to make that pass. And so as a team, organically, we grow together and I know where everybody is. That's how good teams work together long term, is that it becomes unspoken. I mean, you and I never had a chance to work together, but other teams, when we worked at the same company, like there's people I know exactly how to push someone's buttons and I know exactly what they're going to do. And they knew what I was going to do. And so as over time, you kind of grow into that. But you're going to have to start somewhere.
You kind of lost me with the hockey terminology, but it is appropriate. We're in the Schottenstein Center here. This is where the Buckeyes hockey team plays. I have seen a game here before. So just some shameless self-promotion. Check out the podcast I did with Arthur Dollar. He talked about retrospectives a lot. We're going to touch on that again here today. Let's talk a little bit about Agile metrics. So Agile is a different approach. It's a more incremental approach. The standard metrics for productivity, for quality, for future estimation may not apply from other methodologies that aren't Agile. So maybe you want to talk about some of the Agile metrics you find valuable?
So I think, as a team, as someone who is half German, I always kind of like having those metrics and those numbers. It's a really kind of thing. It's hard data, right? Because a lot of people get an Agile, it's a little kumbaya, it's a little touchy-feely and stuff like that. But the metrics give you that kind of that hard, sharp edge to track things. And as a scrum master, a friend of mine who works in a marketing analytics department, he met with the term, it's a dream job. So data rules everything around me. And that's kind of why I approach the scrum master. So you look at your metrics, so your metrics in Agile. So you get your base one, you might have your velocity, which is the number of story points that you can get done in a sprint. And that's something that kind of normalizes over time. And I know I'm not going to get into the whole no estimates versus story points thing, because that's a long argument. It's probably like a 3 or 4 hour podcast to even kind of touch the basics of it. But you track velocity, within a sprint over a number of sprints, you can kind of get a rough idea. And then you have a backlog of work that's estimated out. If I know that my team can do, let's say, roughly 100 points a sprint, and that we have 650 points in my backlog, I know that's going to take 6.5 sprints. You can multiply that by, like, if we're doing 3 week sprints, so that's, 18 weeks. I'm not good at math right now. So that's 18 weeks. That's about 4.5, 5 months, right? Somewhere in that area. So I have an idea what my release is going to be. And then you can track the accuracy at the end of the sprint, how accurate we were in our estimates the last time. And that gives you a feel of, like, can we do more in our sprint? Can we do less? Do we need to trim back? You look at all these metrics and there are, like, larger corporations will do more and more prescriptive stuff. You can do all kinds of release burn downs, burn ups, which is how much work's remaining, how much work we have done, how are we trending in the right place. But metrics are a conversation starter. The actual estimation process is it's a conversation starter. So if I go and I look at the Agile metrics, I see a dip. Your first reaction, especially in like larger corporate environments, is like, oh God, something's happened, something's wrong. Well, let's go talk to them. Maybe that's a week where someone got sick, someone had kids. We had a situation last year where one of my developers had twins and they came a little early. And so we adjusted the sprint backlog, you go from there. There's context around that, not necessarily shown in a particular metric, but it's really about kind of a conversation starter. And metrics, one metric can tell part of the story. You can use multiple metrics to tell a fuller story.
So one of the concerns I always have with metrics is one of my business school professors always said, what gets measured is what gets done. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I'm worried about is, if you measure a certain thing and evaluate a person on that, that they will find a way to, maybe not consciously, but they will find a way to do well in those metrics, whether or not that actually means something is doing well or not. So how do you deal with that sort of trade-off?
So that's the Hawthorne effect, actually. That actually is a technical name for it. And I learned about this a couple of weeks ago when I was doing research for a presentation. The Hawthorne effect basically says that if you know you're being watched on something, you're going to change your behavior to do it. So it's like when you're driving in your car, right? And I'm not going to admit to speeding a lot. I totally speed a lot. But when a cop's there and you know a cop's coming up, you're going to adjust your behavior, right? And your team's going to do the same thing. And so I think that's the struggle that you have in this position is that, are we being true to ourselves? The message from on high is like, hey, we need to do more work. You know, everyone's going to start sandbagging their estimates. So it's one of the things we have to, number one, trust your team. And high-performing teams are going to kind of realize that they can do X and Y to move the stuff. But at the end of the day, they can only do that. But you're going to have to watch them. Are they sandbagging it? You're seeing wide fluctuations in your estimates. You know, all of a sudden, you start to go from doing like, 80 to 90 points a sprint. All of a sudden, now you're doing like 140, 150. Maybe something's going on there. And it's a matter of going back and talking to the team. Like maybe there's something that wasn't as hard as they thought it was going to be. Maybe something was like super easy or trivial. Or maybe they found a quick workaround that they didn't have in sprint planning.
Can we talk briefly about some of the other things that are often associated with Agile and maybe, how you might use some metrics? One of the things I always see associated with Agile is test-driven development, TDD. Is that something that you can measure that helps you running Agile projects? Do you see association of TDD with successful projects?
People, they always talk about TDD and advanced engineering and software craftsmanship practices with Agile. And I think there's, even with the team, like, are we doing Agile testing? Like the Scrum technical definitions don't say do that. I think XP might kind of talks about paired programming. TDD, ATDD, automated testing, continuous development, continuous integration, those are best practices that you should do no matter what. Because there's a benefit to that that goes beyond the methodology, right? It's a way of reducing risk, reducing testing, and making sure that we're doing, the right thing. Even if you're not doing Agile, you should be doing some of these best practices like TDD, CI, and continuous integration, continuous development, just because that's the right thing to do from a software craftsmanship perspective, and that reduces risk. Whether or not you're doing Agile or not, if I can cut back on my regression testing, essentially that reduces risk tremendously, and it saves me time and money on the QA side, I would do that in a heartbeat. And I know they're always associated with one another. If you wanted to, you could always go back and track defects to get in production afterwards, and you'll see a dip. Hopefully, we'll see a dip when you get automated testing. There was a Microsoft study years ago that says doing TDD adds about 20 to 30% to the cost, but reduces maintenance long term, by 90%. I think Uncle Bob spoke here a couple years ago. His analogy was, so over time, your code base becomes this giant Jenga tower. And every time you make a change, you're poking a rock out. And eventually that tower is going to fall because of a bug or whatnot. TDD kind of gives you a nice shell that kind of protects everything. I'm killing his analogy, and I feel like I'm murdering what was probably a beautiful analogy by Uncle Bob. But if you're going to have a complex code base that you're going to have over time, you should absolutely be doing practices like that. If you're doing small throwaway code, maybe that's not a good investment in your time. But yeah, you should always be trying to be doing this stuff, whether doing Agile or not.
If I'm looking to learn more about Agile metrics or just about Agile in general, what are some resources you might recommend?
Scrum.org has got some stuff up there. I go back, read the manifesto. I'm reading a really good book. I can't remember the author's name. I'll send you the link on it because I'm blanking on the name. It's an Agile coaching book. I think within the first chapter, I've been doing this for almost 8 years. I learned like 4 or 5 new things that were great to me about Agile coaching.
That's fine. I'll put links to those resources on the show notes at crosscuttingconcerns.com. Anything else you'd like to promote or plug before we wrap up the show?
If you want video game news, go to GameMainNexus.com, which is a side project I do. If you have questions on stuff, on what I've talked about here, hit me up at C. Huseman on Twitter.
My guest today has been Charles Huseman. Thanks for being on the show.
My pleasure.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves 2017. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. Hosting for this podcast was made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Audacity, Skype, and Camtasia Recorder. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy the music on Amazon or iTunes. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on a future episode, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com to submit your name and idea.
One, two, three. Sibilance.
Check, check, check. Sibilance.